side.
Eric Meehan of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company joining us in studio as we jam here.
Yeah.
With Message in the Bottle. Welcome, sir. Thanks for braving the hazardous conditions.
I knew there was going to be Dave Matthews at the end of it, and I figured that was, My hell is not a closet I'm stuck inside. It's the drivers I'm stuck behind.
Oh, yeah. Well, Carrie and I were talking about that earlier today. It's the extremes that bug me. It's the people who drive like, oh, it's a perfect day. I can
perfect
go
day.
30
right.
miles over the speed limit.
Right.
Not a problem. And then the people who drive like they've never seen snow before.
It's amazing. And as we were saying before we came back on, we burned a snow day again. And it's just going to get worse. And I'm just like, please, people, please remember how to do this.
And I don't want to be that old geezer, but I don't think it was that long ago when, and I'm not criticizing him. I understand we live in a litigious time, but I don't know that this would have been a snow day 10, 15 years ago.
Nah. I mean, especially since 95% of us live within two or three blocks of our chosen school. I could have gotten them there. Just have, listen, I had the tonneau cover rolled back. Just have the entire neighborhood jump into the back of the pickup. Right. I'll get them there. I care this much about education.
You
do. I know.
Do you?
Yes.
So it wasn't about having them in
the house. That's the problem. See, they out there, they can't see me smirking.
Okay.
No. Actually, it wasn't.
Because I know it's my wife's birthday today, and I'm not sure having a five-year-old at home was the best present,
dear.
What are we doing now? What's happening? Entertain me.
That's, you know, actually, my kids broke out their, they have these 3D pens, and all I could think, and I was right, this is my great fear on snow days, right? Is I turn to my son as he's leaving because the neighbor boy came and said, hey, can Eric play? Yes. I'm like, is that unplugged? Because it's essentially, it's a glue gun. It's a heating element, right?
Whoa.
And this stuff kind of comes out. I'm like, this is how house fires happen. And if you weren't here right now, that wouldn't be concerning.
Yeah.
So it's just having to catch the things before they happen. That's
right.
Okay. That's all good. It's just, you know, it's, I like snow days. I just, you know, it occurs to me that, like, I think we all wanted this a little too much because we got used to it on Thanksgiving. It was like, ooh, this is great. We have to work a day, take a day off, work a day, take a day off. But, you know, it's what it is. What's that? We all chose to live here, right?
Yes.
I like snow days. It's cool. It's fun. I'm glad that it was not snowball weather because we watched Elf, and now my son is just obsessed with snowball fight.
He's ready for that fight.
He is. He's, oh my gosh. We already had one, though. I lost.
We had one on Thanksgiving Day.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, I think that was
good.
The day. Yeah,
that was
prime. Good. That was prime. Yeah. They had no idea where it was coming from. I I messed up my rotator cuff, but I had a very good arm, and I was a pitcher, and I was whatever. So I it was great. Just for about two or three snowballs worth, my wife and daughter, who were building a snowman way, way on the inside, had no idea what was happening. And then I got in trouble.
Incoming.
And, yeah, and then the entire family chased me. It was well-deserved and well-earned. It was good. The element of surprise is big with me. Why were we playing Dave Matthews? Because Dave Matthews is from South Africa, and we're talking about South Africa today. And when you're, I couldn't go with Africa Again by Toto. And frankly, I like that riff. It's a really cool riff.
Yes.
So that's what, and it brightens up the day because let's be honest, it's already dark, as Richard Barron noted. It looks like it's midnight.
Crazy.
It's good times. By the way, I am so impressed. They have the 10th hardest schedule in the nation. That's insane.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm just, who's ever in the scheduling department? Wow. Ambitious. But hopefully they get into the tournament. It'd be really cool. All right, South Africa, right? So we're talking about Southern Hemisphere wines, right, for the remainder of the year, we finished up with South America. South Africa, their wine regions are roughly in the same location latitudinally as Mendoza and the Santiago and stuff. So we're basically talking about that same. Same rough area of where the prime growing grapes, grape growing areas are. I can speak, really. But what's really interesting about South Africa is it's the oldest geology in the world where grapes are being grown because of science. And I'm not going to go over plate tectonics and the movement of everything, but essentially the geography that is there is the oldest where grapes are being heavily grown. I mean, you think about California, there's been a lot of upheaval. You think about Europe, But South Africa's got a tremendous, and which is why, you know, Weathering finds diamonds and fossils and things like this, which is a whole other segment. As far as the soil types, though, you've got granite, you've got sandstone, you've got shale, and these all naturally strain the vines and give them vigor because they have to, you know, dig deep. We all know that that's what vines like. There's huge, huge biodiversity in South Africa. Wine regions all over the place, but all very, very favored. You've got certainly less fertile and colder areas. You've got more fertile areas, but they're all moderated by a current from Antarctica called the Benguela current. I always mess that up. And that's responsible for cooler than temperatures you'd presume in that part of the world. It keeps it really, really nice. And of course, as we know, the best way to get really, you know, beautifully extended growing seasons for grapes is to have some sort of cooling. It's the Humboldt current in South America and parts of California. It's this Benguela current in South Africa. It's a very, very common thing that you see in many, many of the great wine regions of the world. South Africa, I mean, sometimes I like to sort of dub this segment, you know, all I needed to know about South Africa, I learned in Lethal Weapon 2, which is sort of true for much of my life, up until I started to get to know South African wines. But let's talk a little bit about it because it's kind of important, right? South America is 80% sub-Saharan ancestry. That means black people, right? But for a long, long time, they were ruled by a nationalistic white party. That caused a lot of problems, which is one of the big, big reasons why South Africa as a wine-growing country is indeed one of the oldest wine-growing countries in the world, but also one of the sort of newest in terms of the modern wine scene. 1487, Portuguese explorer Bartholomew Dias was the first European voyage to land there. 1652 was the first settlement in Cape Town. 1659 was the first important vineyard plantation. Took them a little while, don't you think?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think that's kind of, you know. The wines were brought by Dutch and English, vinifera, right? The kind of grapes that we like to drink. And they were grown in the region for hundreds and hundreds of years. And as I said, in 1659, the Constancia Vineyard, wines of which we've occasionally featured on this very program, was planted. And it is still there. It's a little escarpment that goes out into the ocean. And it's absolutely gorgeous. But the wine industry, as I mentioned, was stunted under really oppressive government control. In 1918, there was, and this is one of my least favorite things to ever try and say. Forgive me. That's my caveat every time I try this. The Cooperative Weinbauers Vereniging van Zuid-Afrika, which is thankfully shortened to KWV, which is what we're going to be using for the rest of the segment.
That's pretty good.
Right? Not bad.
You got a little hint of the Dutch in there.
I try to do the Dutch. Again, everything I know, I learned from Lethal Weapon 2. And it was first created in 1918 through the funding of the government as a force to grow and stabilize the South African wine industry, which I will remind you had already been around for hundreds of years. And over time, it was granted more and more control over the wine and spirits industry, essentially until 1990 and 91, when the ruling National Party lost power, which was one of the first sort of epic movements that I remember as a young man. I mean, I'm 41 years old, and of course, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall, and then shortly thereafter, South Africa. So that's what that was, and. Another important thing to keep in mind on another tip is not only was it white people in power, it was white men in power. So another thing that you're seeing now in South Africa is female winemakers of note. And that's very, very important to keep in mind because in a lot of other great wine countries, it is one of the most egalitarian industries. If you can do it, you can do it. It's not like male or female dominated and, you know. So finally, you're starting to see that sort of result of you know, about 30 years now of increased freedom. Going back to the KWV really quick. So what happened? It's still around, right? They still make wines under their auspices. It's still a big cooperative. It still oversees international wine and spirits production. on a pretty big scale. So you will, you know, if you're out in the world, and you will see wines that are labeled KWV, and that is, it's probably not a bad wine. Just in case you're curious to try it, it just happens to be sort of the vestige of this government-controlled wine entity. Since that time, so right the sort of the early to mid 90s, there's been a lot of international investment. It is arguably, and to some inarguably, the most beautiful wine country in the world, but it is also absolutely some of the most prime wine country in the world. And so very much like explorations into southern England, explorations into part of Scandinavia now, explorations into California 40, 50 years ago by some of the champagne houses, they're looking for new places that are going to be not as affected by the effects of climate change. And certainly they're hoping that South Africa may be, you know, prime for that because of such a biodiversity and diversity in the climes. The wine we're drinking today, because I know we're running out of a little bit of time, and this is one of my favorites. We've worked with this family for years now at this point. It's the Badenhorst family, and this is their Shiraz, which is a blend predominantly of Shiraz, which is definitely one of the biggest red grapes you'll see, in addition to Cabernet Sauvignon, and the local Pinotage, which is a blend of Pinot Noir and Sanso, which can be really nice, and in its worst iterations can smell like a tire fire. And
this does not.
Well, this has no Grenache in it. But what it does have is Sanso, the mother grape to that, which is a French varietal from southern France, which is fairly thick-skinned and is popular in places where you have, you know, things like Shiraz, Grenache. You know, it's these are all sort of beefy grapes. But Sanso adds a certain air of femininity to it, so it's kind of interesting. This is my favorite thing. I always have to read this when we taste a Badenhorst. So this is Badenhorst was founded by cousins, right? And this is straight off their website, and I love it. The property is owned by the dynamic and good-looking cousins, Hein and Adi Badenhorst. I mean, you got to tell people, maybe yeah. It's not true. I'm just saying. Their grandfather was farm master at Groot Constantia. So remember, the Constantia vineyard was the first one planted way back in 1649. Well, 59, rather, excuse me. So their grandfather was the farm master there for 40 years. And Hein did his first vinting at age 13. And so obviously he's got a lot of skills there. They restored an old property, 20 hectares of old bush vines. So that's a little about 55 acres of old bush vines located in Swartland, north of Cape Town, which is a region that has probably seen the most growth since the end of apartheid. So I only have another minute or two, so I wanted to mention December tastings at the store. December 12th, we have Justin DeWalt from Chartrand Imports, located in Rockland, Maine, coming to show us his biodynamic and organic wines. They are fabulous, and I encourage you to come out. Then on December 19th, we will also be having a tasting featuring our new friends from Ager's Mead in Pittsfield, as well as some excellent wines and other holiday ideas. We have gift certificates. We've got all sorts of stuff for your holiday needs. Do come on into the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, and we will set you up, because time is fleeting, folks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we just lost a day to a wonderful snow day. But if you're like me, I've bought nothing. I've bought nothing. And I don't want to get to the 25th and have nothing, or else.
No.
Yeah. So
won't be good.
So if you're in the same boat, we'll be there at 10 o'clock tomorrow for you.
Fabulous.
Cheers.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Look forward to hearing about the Nutcracker as well.
I do too. Yes, my lovely daughter in Nutcracker in a Nutshell. I don't think there's much too many tickets available, but if you'd like to come see, she's fabulous.
There you go.